Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Money Power. Yes, that's what we're going to be talking about today. Money power. Who could not use more money? I remember a joke someone told me once about being at a party, and there was a millionaire talking with a billionaire, and the millionaire said, "Well, when do you think there's ever enough?" And the billionaire said, "Well, just a little bit more." And of course, so many of us were not billionaires. And many of us are not even millionaires, but we want to be comfortable. And how can you do that? If you're in business for yourself, if you're a mom managing a budget, what is it that we need to be aware of so that we have a sense of profitability in our lives? What does that mean? It means freedom for choices many times, having a profit is so much more than what we often consider just the bottom line. My guest today, Ruth King, has put out, I was telling her before we went on the air, it's a small book, but it is a very concise, powerful book. We're talking about the courage to be profitable. Get and stay profitable in less than 30 minutes a month. This isn't a joke, folks. She's really put this together. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna, for having me. I appreciate it.
Ruth, we were talking for just a moment before we went on air, and you made a remark. You say, I made the comment to you, this is not something that is taught in business school. This isn't something that when people get their MBAs, they're dealing with numbers, they're looking at becoming maybe a successful entrepreneur or working for a big corporation. And you said that's true. They want to be comfortable, and you made some wonderful comments. Let's just talk a little bit about you. Now, you've got an MBA in finance from Georgia State University.
I didn't learn this in MBA school.
I'm sorry, we talked over there. Why is it this became important to you?
Well, reality was that I started working with small businesses, and I went to MBA school because I was an engineer. And I knew I'd always wanted my own business and had from the time I was a little girl. And I thought the MBA was the route to go, but it did teach me accounting and it did teach me finance, but it didn't teach me anything about how to run a small business and how financials worked in a small business. That I had to learn on my own. And I remember the day I filed my first tax return, and I didn't understand what cash and accrual accounting was. And I asked my neighbor, who was a business owner, and he told me, and I said, okay, I have to get educated. And so I started learning it, and then I started teaching it. And I've been working with small businesses now for the past 32 years. And I found out that I have a real knack and ability to actually explain things in simple terms in English rather than accounting ease. And you don't learn this in MBA school, because MBA school, for the most part, unless you go to some very specific entrepreneurial programs, is meant for people who want to be in larger corporations who generally don't have to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I talk both from my own experience, and I just know so many other business people who are in the smaller businesses. They don't have Fortune 500 companies. But in this country, in the United States, it's that small business person that actually has been the backbone of our financial strength. And we have so much critical stuff going on right now, and we're finding such poor decision-making, and there's a lot of people that are saying, I want to go into business for myself, I've got to be able to support myself. I want to be independent. And they have all of these very strong feelings and emotions. And you say, wait a minute. Let's get past certain emotions here. Let's get practical. Now, You taught about teaching this. You had a 16-week course. You're involved with working with entrepreneurs. Let's go right into the very, very beginning of your book, the difference between a hobby and a business.
Right. A hobby is something that you love. You work 60, 70, 80 hours a week at it. And you never look at your financial statements. You don't care about your financial statements. You just care about taking care of the next customer and then the next customer and then having cash to be able to take the next customer on. And then 10, 15, 20 years later, you have nothing to sell. You burn yourself out. You get hurt. You just get to the point where you really and truly don't really want to do the business anymore. It's not fun anymore. Take that with a real honest-to-God business. You also love what you do. You absolutely love what you do, and you may work 60 hours a week, but you do it with an eye towards profitability. You do it with an eye that says, okay, I want to build value in my business. Yes, I want to take care of my customers. Yes, I want to, you know, do really cool things for them and have great products and services that satisfy their needs, but you do it with an eye of making actual money at it, and you put money away and you build equity in your business, and then you have choices. If 10 years from now somebody comes knocking on your door and says, I want to buy your business, you have something to sell. If you decide to retire and deed the business over to your kids or sell it to somebody else, you have something to sell. And that's a real business. You're building equity. You're paying attention to the financial side of your company so that you truly understand that you are profitable, you're making a profit, and you're still doing good things, but you're actually paying attention.
Let's say someone has a hobby. They want to make it a profitable business. They have such a passion for it. See, when I think of someone with a hobby, they may not do it 60, 70 hours a week. They're just, to me, a hobby was always just futzing around with something. It's just sort of a fun thing. It's a distraction, and they have usually another kind of income. But you're talking about someone that's actually working at someone and at something and isn't looking at making that profit at the bottom line. And so it's tough for a lot of people to do that. It really, really is. How can you take something that's a hobby that you willingly put a lot of time, effort, and energy into and make it into something profitable? How can you make that shift?
It's a shift in thinking that more than anything else. It's saying, okay, I love doing this. What do I need to do, number one, to be able to generate enough revenue and profit to be able to live off of it rather than whatever I'm doing in my 9-to-5 job or whatever you're doing that's, you know, paying the bills. And you have to really put together something that says, okay, if I sell it for X and these are all of my direct costs or the cost of making X or providing X service, and I have all of my overhead costs, including the salary that I need to make to be able to live and do this, how much do I have to sell? How much it comes down on the bottom line? And then you make a decision, can I do this or not? It's really not that difficult to do in the abstract, but actually sitting down and forcing yourself to sit down is really what's, in some people's mind, hard to do. You know, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. Well, sit down and figure out what it will take to do it. And it's either going to be yes or no, and then you'll make the decision to do it or not do it.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the financial statement. And then you have the story of the cooked frog. Financial statement. Gray hairs automatically start popping up. It's as if it's an ugly, ugly demon. What can help someone get past this? Because it is something all of us have to deal with. All of us have to deal with this. Even if we're a mom working with the basics of home budgeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me talk through the cooked frog a little bit. If you put a frog in a pot of water and you slowly increase the heat, he doesn't really understand. You know, one day he's going to be dead. And I align that with financial statements. Is, you know, you take a look at them, you're profitable, and you throw it in a drawer because it says you're profitable, but you're not really paying attention. And then one day it's going to come bite you in the butt, and you're going to be dead. So it's like the cooked frog. If you don't pay attention to it. But reality is, you know, we've learned so many more difficult things than the financial side of business. And, you know, when we were kids, you know, our parents made us learn our ABCs, you know, for example, you know, and they got on our case and they got on our case and they got on our case until we finally learned our ABCs. You know, a lot of us went kicking and screaming and just didn't want to do it, but they made us do it. And then all of a sudden we learned to read. And this whole new world opened up to us because we could read. We learned our ABCs. And it's the same with financial statements, except that we don't have our parents over our heads doing do this, do this, do this. Usually what happens when people start paying attention to is they get into trouble. They don't have cash to pay payroll, or the IRS comes knocking at their door asking for their piece of your profits and you have no cash. And something, you know, causes you, vendors are trying to shut you down or something like that is when people really and truly start paying attention. Unfortunately, they don't until then. But the reality is once this world gets opened up to you, and it's really not a hard world to learn, you can make all these great decisions, you make profitable decisions, and you know, and that's really where the courage to be profitable comes in, because what happens is you understand the financial side of business, and you see what your financial statements are telling you, and you make decisions based on what they're telling you. If things are going great, no big problems. But if things are not going the direction you want to go in and you can see why, sometimes making those decisions is very, very difficult, and that's where the courage comes in. We talked about that, you know, in the beginning of the book, the very beginning where I talk about George and Steve. Steve was a business owner who grew his business from $500,000 to over $16 million in sales. And he knew his financials inside out, backwards and forwards and upside down. And then the market changed, and he watched his business die. Mm-hmm. Like $15 million to $6 million and sold it to get out of debt. His reason was he was afraid to fire people or didn't want to fire people who had been with him for more than 21 years. Yet he was the one who took the losses for the business. Mm-hmm. That's the courage to be profitable.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's something that I think it's very hard for people when they're in big, or they don't even have to be a big business, to be mm-hmm. able to say to someone, I regret, but due to whatever is occurring, we're going to need to let you go. Now, a lot of people are experiencing this, and there are so many times in businesses where you do have to make cuts. I've often said that I think sometimes some of the decisions that are being made nationally need to be perhaps replaced with some housewife thinking, because mm-hmm. a woman that runs her household, if she doesn't have the money, she doesn't go out and spend it. She isn't going to continue to run up bills and debts ad infinitum. And we're seeing on a national level, on a governmental level, how people are not checking what you call the balance sheet. They're not really looking at the numbers. It's just like, well, we'll keep doing something. We'll use that as an example. We need to come back to our own space. We need to realize that if we're an employee with a company, and that company has to reassess things. It's that company's responsibility to do what they can do to stay in business. Otherwise, they're going to have to close it down. If they close it down, everybody's out. It's a fascinating thing about business, and it's something that most people are not really going to have an understanding of in general. And I know that that is what it was with me, because for many years, I worked for other people. I didn't care. I'd go in, get my check, and I'd go home. It was no big deal. When I went into working for myself, that was a whole different kettle of fish. So
definitely.
You bring out so many points in your book. Let's talk about, for just a moment, how financial statements came about. Let's trip back in history a little bit. Who started
All right.
this stuff?
Financial statements were actually started by the Venetian monks in about the year 1300 to thereabouts, because they had to find a way to account for the rich Italians' money. And back in the 1300s, there was no QuickBooks. There were no calculators. There was no Peachtree. There was, you know, none of the things that we have today. So they had to make it simple. A profit and loss statement is just basically addition and subtraction.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't changed for 1,000 years, and the likelihood is it's not going to change for the next 1,000 years. So, the reality is, if you open up your mind for a little bit, or read the book, or whatever else it is, and you'll find that it's not really hard. It's very, very easy. It's simple arithmetic that you can do with a calculator, and we all have calculators these days. So there's no excuses for not being able to at least punch buttons in a calculator. It's very, very easy to do, and the reality is that you can do it. You just got to open your mind to do it. It's not hard.
Now, let's talk about what cash is. The immediate picture that's going to come into mind is a dollar bill. This is cash. This is money. Talk to us about cash and how you work with it. I mean, this is something that we need to be aware of.
Right. There's actually three things. There's cash, cash flow, and profits. Cash is actually, you know, obviously the dollars that you have in the door, but the critical thing is actually cash flow, which means money, you know, and as you go to the simple budget in the household, you know, it's the cash coming into the household, how much cash is coming in, where is it coming from, and you build up a tank of cash, so to speak. And then the cash flow out is the drain on that tank. And the drain is, you know, for groceries and paying the rent and paying the light bill and paying the grocery bill. And all of a sudden that level of cash goes down. And then if there's no cash left, you can't go out and buy any, you know, any of the groceries anymore. The cash flow has to come in again of some way, shape, or form. And you can do the same thing with business. You know, cash coming in, cash flow coming in is from profitable sales, i.e. your sales must make a profit, and collecting on those sales. So you're looking at collections coming in if you're lucky enough to have a line of credit from a bank. And all these things go in, but you've got to make sure what's coming in at least balances what's going out so that the level of cash in your tank, so to speak, remains, you know, level. You know, obviously, you'd like the level of cash to rise so that you have more coming in than going out. But there are going to be some months where you have more coming out than going in, so you just have to make sure that the level of cash in your tank is large enough so that that happens.
When it comes to looking at a monthly statement, you have the profit and loss. Mm-hmm. And this is something that is extremely important. And many people have the conception that you want to show as much loss as you can. For tax purposes. Well, there's the pluses and minuses of that, but you really have to look at what is going to have to go out. What is coming in? How do you manage it? What are you going to need to shift or change so that if you've got more going out that is going to be going up, for example, your debt positioning, you've got to do some thinking. You really have to look at what's in front of you. And you give a wonderful story in here about a woman who had a business. And everything was great on paper, but she was going broke. What happened?
I will call them an accounting firm, and I will put them in quotes, or a bookkeeping firm, and I'll put them in quotes, who was preparing her financial statements every month, and she didn't know how to read them. So she'd look at it every month, showed a profit on the bottom line, threw it in the drawer. Next month, showed a profit on the bottom line, throw it in a drawer. And this went on and on, you know, for a long time, and she couldn't understand because a lot of times she couldn't pay her bills, and things weren't going right. Creditors were calling, you know, I need payment, et cetera, had problems making payroll. And so she said, I need some help, and she called me. And I looked at the financials, and I said to her, you don't know and really understand how to read these, do you? And she goes, no, not really. I said, okay, go back to your accounting firm and ask these questions. Long story short, it turned out that whenever they didn't know where something was, they put it in miscellaneous sales to make her showing
Lord.
A profit.
Amazing.
And, yeah, and as a result of it, she fired them, obviously. Learned how to read a P&L and a balance sheet, and she said, I spent the three most miserable months of my life, but now I know how to question. And I look at my statements every month, and if something doesn't look right, I question it.
I know that I know someone who's in business, and that was something that they would say to me over and over and over again. You must know where the money's going, and you must understand if you have a loss, what that loss is going to cost you, how are you going to cover it. And in many ways, Ruth, to me, it has always sort of been common sense. You either have it or you don't have it. Now, that's simplifying it quite a bit. But in our world today, we have so much stuff going on electronically. We really do have to pay attention, just like this lady you mentioned. She thought that these people knew what they were doing. Boy, I've gotten burned. I had an audit one year, and the IRS person that did the audit said, this is great. You're fine. But do you know your accounting firm is not doing this, this, and this? When you have an IRS person that's telling you, do you know your accounting firm is not doing this, this, and this? And you go, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have a penalty or anything, but the services that I had hired, not unlike the woman you described, they weren't doing their job. They literally were incompetent.
Over the years, I have fired many CPAs. And the reality is a lot of them are want to do things that make it easy for them rather than make it easy for you to run your business. Now, I don't ask them to do anything that's immoral or unethical or anything like that, but there are certain formats that you want to look at a profit and loss statement in, and not to make it easy for them to do their taxes, but something that makes it easy for you to do your day-to-day business and keep track of what's going on. And a lot of them would say, no, it's got to be in this format. You have to use this absolute numbers in GL accounts, general ledger accounts. And I'm like, no, you don't. It's not. You can do it any way you want. And I'll give you a perfect example. I had one of my clients who, when I walked in, knew that he had a problem with warranty and with people, you know, not doing their jobs right and doing what are called callbacks, which were making mistakes, and they had to go back to fix them free of charge. And this was costing him a lot of money on his P&L. And he was one of those guys who looked at the bottom line and just threw it in a drawer, too. So I made the bookkeeper put the warranty and callback expense right above net profit. Now, it didn't change the bottom line, but she just changed where the different things were categorized, so it wasn't in alphabetical order anymore. And very soon after that, because he had to look at that number every single month, warranties went away, callbacks went away, and he became much more profitable. And that's a perfect example of being able to, you know, you're just changing where things are going on your P&L. You're not changing the bottom lines, and that's something that an accounting firm wouldn't do for him. I mean, why? I mean, it's not changing your bottom line. It's just making it easier for you to see what's going on and do something about it.
Overhead costs. This is something that you go into, and whether you're a one-person business or you have 1,000 employees, this is something that needs to be looked at. And many individuals, especially if they are entrepreneurs, they honestly do not realize how much overhead costs they've got in many respects. Well, let's put that together quickly.
Okay. I do something called overhead cost per hour. And what overhead cost per hour means that for every hour that one of your employees works producing a product or a service, how much overhead do you have to attach to it? So that is a piece of the light bill, a piece of the rent, a piece of the receptionist salary, a piece of the bank charges, you know, everything that's overhead. And to calculate that number, what you do is you take your – you do it on an annual basis. So you'll take last year's year-end net profit – or last year's total overhead – and divide it by the number of revenue hours or the number of hours that you use to produce your products and services. It doesn't include your bookkeeper's salary or your receptionist salary or anything like that. It just includes the people who actually produced products and services. So how many hours did they spend doing that? And a lot of times it just comes off your payroll and looking at it from there. If you're a sole proprietor, how many hours did you actually go out there and produce products and services and divide the overhead by those numbers of hours. Now, as an entrepreneur, you know, I jokingly say we work half days, you know, which 12 hours a day are we working? But some of it is working, you know, doing the books and those types of things, and others of it is actually producing products and services. And if you're a sole proprietor or, you know, doing something out of your home, you would take those hours that you actually did the products and services as your number of hours and take your overhead and divide it by those number of hours. And so you know, for example, if your overhead cost per hour comes out to be $32, that means for every job that you do, if it's 8 hours, you have to add 32 times 8, which is $256 as cost before you even break even.
That is a level of thinking that I don't think many people even consider. They really don't. Look at this. Now, you have a chapter that says, what do I really need to do? And you say three major activities: weekly cash flow reports, a monthly financial ratio analysis, a monthly trend analysis. Now, I could just hear somebody that's got a business of their own groaning over this thing. Oh, my Lord. I have got so much to do. You have got to be kidding. Weekly, monthly, on financial ratio, monthly trend analysis. You've got to be kidding. That's hours. You say it's not hours.
No, not even close. You can do them in about 15 minutes a month, actually. What reality is that when you're setting it up, yes, the first time you set it up, it's going to take longer. But every month doing it, I mean, I do it every month for my clients. My clients do it every month once I teach them, and they literally do it in less than 30 minutes a month. And mm-hmm. if you can't devote 30 minutes a month, I'm not talking about a day, I'm talking about a month, to the financial side of your company, you're in trouble.
So this is a form of discipline. This is rethinking. It is understanding that we are in a positioning not only of empowering ourselves economically, and again, it can be someone that's working with what they have, and maybe it's a mom in a home that doesn't make any difference, or you've got a huge company. All of this is some basic information. Now, I know that you've got this all really put together in your book. You've got some charts, but you've made it simple. And you have a comment in here, financial fruit salad is a recipe for disaster. What's the fruit salad?
Financial fruit salad is when you have revenues in 1 month and expenses against those revenues in another month. You have to always know what your services and products are costing you. And if you have revenues in a month and expenses to produce those revenues in another month, you have like apples in January and oranges in February, and you have to put them together, you have fruit salad. You don't want fruit salad. You want apples and apples, or you want oranges and oranges, or me in Atlanta, peaches and peaches. You have to have revenues matching expenses in the same month. Then you don't have fruit salad.
And you make a comment, too, about how growth can mask unprofitability. And your comment, which someone might say, are you kidding? Your company can be unprofitable and still survive. Mm-hmm. Someone might say, you got to be kidding. If you're unprofitable, you're out of business. But I know that that's not true.
No, it's not true. Perfect example is I had a client who started this business at zero, grew the business to about $2 million, and stopped growing. And once he stopped growing, he started having problems being able to pay his bills. And when I went and did the analysis of his business, he was losing a nickel for every dollar that came in the door. And what happened was the growth masked the unprofitability because the cash from one project started the next project. And as long as the projects were getting more and more and were growing and growing, you always had cash. And he was running his business on cash. He didn't really understand that he wasn't profitable. Remember me talking about the tank of cash a little bit earlier? And we always mm-hmm. wanted to make sure that the cash coming in was greater than the cash flow going out, so that the level of tank was rising. Well, his tank was just draining very slightly every single year because he was not profitable. But he didn't see it because the cash masked that profit. And you know, a nickel a year, you know, a nickel for every dollar that walks in the door is not going to be that noticeable unless you sit down and do the work until you stop growing.
Well, you have so many good points in your book, and we could talk for hours on this, but there are so many down-to-earth points that I think are extremely valuable. So for those of you listening, you want to pay attention to what's going on in your business. She tells you how to avoid embezzlement, which I've known a lot of companies that have gone through this, how you can make assessments. This little book, and it's a book you could put in a briefcase, The Courage to be Profitable. This is something that anyone, a high school student, could benefit from this. An executive can benefit from this. And I always say we can always learn something from someone that walks the walk of dealing with whatever their expertise is. And by the way, that will hold true for Ruth King. Ruth, your website is thecouragetobeprofitable.com, thecouragetobeprofitable.com. And you can go in and you can check out all of the details there. But boy, in today's world, when we just shake our heads at some people like like the Bernie Madoffs and all of these other individuals that have built money out of people like you wouldn't believe. Take charge. Take charge of where you are. That makes a difference. Ruth King, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me. I hope I helped your audience.
So do I, and I know it gave me some good tips, too. This is Donna Sebo. Check out The Courage to be Profitable. Why not? You want to be sure that you have money in your pocket. Don't turn it over to someone else without understanding what you need to do. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in to if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Then let me tell you what I perceive, and after that, then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that you like. Every day, I find myself reviewing material, getting involved in conversations with people, working with clients, preparing for the show. There's a lot of things that go on, and I'm always intrigued with points of information that I come across. And of course, I'll share some of that with you today, but I wanted to share something with you that occurred just yesterday with a client of mine, and this is something I think that we need to pay attention. They found that they hadn't been getting their mail, and this had been going on since this past weekend. Mail wasn't delivered on Saturday, wasn't delivered on Monday or Tuesday, and they said, wow, this is really strange. Well, they went to the post office. I mean, they weren't even getting junk mail. They go to their local post office, and the person in the post office said, oh, you've moved. Your mail has been, it's no longer going to XYZ address. Someone had fraudulently signed a form stating that the mail was to be delivered to another address. So, bills, all kinds of things that had been coming to their home, to their box out in front of their yard, had been diverted. Now, this is something that is very hard, and of course, you notify the authorities, you notify the post office, but the question was, how could someone just go in, fill out a form without producing identification, saying that they were who we are, and these people have lived in their home for many, many years, no questions asked, it was automatically done. Now, there is this aspect of fraud, and you need to be aware of this. There's people's identity that often is taken. So a post office box is a very good, safe place for your items to be sent to. And, of course, I told my client that. But when they shared this with a friend of theirs, their friend said, well, why in the world would that happen? Who would do something like this? Well, quite often it might be someone that you know. But I can tell you in my own neighborhood here in the Pacific Northwest, people's mail was being stolen out of their mailboxes because there were those crooks that wanted to get access to information. We have people that are hacking into computers, so why not mailboxes? And they just caught a huge gang of people up in Seattle just recently, and this is something we need to be consciously aware of. So I'm sharing this with you. Think about security in the sense of if you have things being sent to you, bills or anything like this, don't assume if you have a mailbox that's out on the street that it won't be touched. It's far better for you to have things go into a P.O. box. The choice is yours. But if you find that you are not getting even junk mail for a day or two, go and check at your local post office so that you don't end up having happen to you what happened to these clients. It is not an experience anyone wants to go through because you have to go to your banks, your credit card companies. You have to notify everybody, even your utility company, because your bills are coming into you. So this is something that's exceedingly important, and I just want you to be alert to it. So these things are happening. Do not assume anything. Of course, we all do at any given time. But please be alert. Be aware. There are those individuals that have no ethics, and they feel like they're entitled to whatever they can steal. So you will have to be diligent yourself. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. Well, up here in the Pacific Northwest, we practically do a tango whenever the sun comes out. We just bask in the golden glow. And today is not one of those golden glow days, although the hummingbirds and the bumblebees could care less. They're just feeling great. We've got our typical gray skies. And when I came across a beautiful statement by William Blake and this exquisite photograph that went with the quotation underneath it, and it's this golden sun, I said, yes, this I have to share on the air today. And this is what William Blake said. It's from The Echoing Green. The sun does arise and make happy the skies. The merry bells ring to welcome the spring. And, of course, here in the Pacific Northwest, we're enjoying beautiful, beautiful flowers. This is the time of year. And when you come up, you will see the splashes of color. And, of course, up in northern Washington, we have the tulip fields. And, oh, it's just an amazing experience. But you always have to make sure that you're prepared because those April showers definitely do rain on you. Of course, I call it liquid gold. So whatever you do, get out. Enjoy the spring. It's absolutely invigorating. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. A little bit of trivial information for you. It isn't really trivial. Hackers, I don't care, small, medium, large, when it comes to computer systems, there are always those individuals that love to get in to your system, somebody else's system, I mean government systems, whatever. So what is one of the best safeguards? It's your password. To keep your online password safe, you need to have your upper and lower case letters and symbols, very different, and you should have at least 8 characters. The Carnegie Mellon University said to make them even more difficult for a hacker software to crack, deliberately use misspellings. And this is the example that they give. MISYSTERI, $, mystery, great. All right. They say usually the hackers, their software runs through combos of correctly spelled words from the dictionary. So when you misspell something, it's an excellent defense, using symbols, etc. And I know of some people that have more than 8 characters. They've got 20 characters, and I look at them, and if you're like me, you go, who wants 20 characters like that?
Caller line 2.
You're just going to go bonkers. So you have to make sure, if you're like me, to keep your password someplace where you're going to be able to remember what they are. Because if you're like me, sometimes you made them so complicated, you forget. So you need to have them stored somewhere where they are safe. Donna Sebo here. We've got a caller on the line. Welcome to the show, caller, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
I'm calling from Decatur, Georgia.
Well, welcome. I know the sun is shining there in Georgia.
No, it's not. As a matter of fact, it's raining.
Oh, you're kidding.
Started raining yesterday.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Yes, I'm surprised myself because the forecast said it was going to be sunny for the rest of the week. That was the beginning of the week. And I thought, well, that's the weather. It will change on you.
Absolutely. Give me your first name or initial, dear.
My initial is MQ.
MQ, all right. MQ, the first thing that I'm looking at with you is education. Now, I'm finding this very interesting because you are a woman that I think will always be going on with your education. You are always going to be open to learning. But you've come to a stalemate, and I'm saying to yourself, I've got to find someone that I can interact with. And for whatever reasons, I really think you need to find a group of men and women that are oriented in what I call an entrepreneurial type of thinking process. So maybe there's an entrepreneurial club that you can become associated with. I really think that you've got to be around some people that are good at brainstorming. You don't want people that are going to try to tell you what to do. What you want to do is have a bunch of ideas tossed out on a table so that you can pick out whatever pieces you want. And that's the cartoon I'm getting in my head. I'm seeing a round table. I'm seeing like three, four people. And all of this stuff, all of these ideas are going into this clear glass pot. And it's like I'm looking at all kinds of little moving numbers and forms and little items there, and you're going, okay, this might work and this might work. So you're selectively choosing what you will fit with your situation. And this is how you've been all your life. You've known that whenever you try to follow somebody's ABC direction, for some reason it always falls apart. It doesn't work. Well, maybe you only needed A. Maybe you only needed C. Maybe you needed BC. Whatever it is, you have to discern what's appropriate for you. Now, this is something because you're wanting financial independence and you're wanting to have it in a very consistent way. This is, you're saying, the people I'm around most of the time, they're locked in to certain paradigms. I've got to get through this. I've got a breakthrough, but how can I do it? Well, being around people that think outside the box will help you do it. And it's going to take two steps. I don't know exactly what those steps are at the moment. It'll take two applications of effort. You'll be able to see what you need to do. You'll take care of number one, and you'll take care of number two. And it's like then everything starts moving again. You are breaking a mold of perception about yourself, your capabilities, and what's happening with you, and I really like how you're doing it. You're not trying to run. You're not trying to be speed woman of the year. You're wanting to think it through. You're really wanting to deal with some very good basic steps. Once you do that, you're on your way. And I give you about 3 years, and you'll be at the level of financial independence that you want. And it's going to be a series of tiny, tiny baby steps taken quickly, but consistently, and you're going to see the results. And it's going to surprise people. It really is going to surprise people. You're not going to be surprised because you're going to say, this is my objective, but you're sort of going to keep a little quiet. You're not going to broadcast what you're doing to others because you have two people around you that'll sabotage you every time you tell them what you want to do. Every single time. I don't know who they are. One that looks like is a friend, and someone else may be another individual that you have respected as a professional, but it's either their way or the highway. And you have to break away from this. You need to know that you have to establish what is right for you, and that's extremely important. What question do you have for me today?
Oh, wow, that was very enlightening. Because I always have been sort of kind of freelance or entrepreneur, sort of, on my own out there, but I never did it in a big way. Wow. And I know that in my spirit, that's what I want. That was right on. The question I have for you today is, hello?
I'm here. I'm listening.
Oh, I thought you had gone. It had gotten so quiet.
No, I'm listening.
I'm expecting an investment to come through any time now. Do you see that coming through?
It's going to be delayed. It's going to be delayed. There are so many aspects that you need to be alert to. I'm going to go back to what I said before. I want you to find an environment that is going to be supportive of you. And I think if you can find an entrepreneurial group where you have people from all walks of life, all kinds of different skills and talents, you need that kind of support so that you can move forward. But the investment you're looking at, I'm seeing delay. So don't
delay.
Feel badly
okay.
about it, because you need to move forward with or without that investment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I want to thank you for your call, MQ. And
I'm
tell your friends
what,
about
what,
the
you
show.
Do you see love around me?
Excuse me?
Do you see love around me?
Oh, hon, there's so much love around you. It's wonderful. I'm going to go on break. If you'll stay with me for just a moment, I'll come back. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a short break. I'm going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Siebel, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
As a counselor, Donna Siebel is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. I'll go to MQ in just a moment to address her question she asked. I want to let those of you in Alaska who might be listening know that I will be up in the far north towards the end of April and the early part of May. The dates are getting sort of locked down. I should be having that information. If not by tomorrow, I will have it by the first part of next week. So anyway, I'll be letting you know where the microphone is going to be traveling to, because the Donna Siebel Show goes on no matter where I am appearing. This is Donna, and we're going to go back to MQ in Decatur, Georgia. MQ, you have a question for me. Are you still online?
Yes, I was talking about relationship, love.
Well, when you talk about love, there's an abundance of love around you. There's no lack of love around you. But what you're really wanting to ask me, is there going to be that significant other? And I'm seeing in about 2 to 4 years. And the reason I'm getting 2 to 4 years is that you haven't released some of the agitation that has evolved and the lack of trust that has evolved over past experiences. Now, the lack of trust, the reason that it's there, you've got good reason. I mean, there's been a lot of disappointment. However, what you have to do is take care of you first. And you need to really get to the point of understanding of what it is that you want. It's not all about sex. And it's about communication. It is about someone that's going to be supportive of you. You need someone that's articulate, someone that is going to be able to have a conversation and be a supporter and a partner with you. All of that is exceedingly important. It's when you look at the wrong things that you, when I say wrong things, it's sort of like being like a child. You need to really grow up into the woman you are and expect that you're going to have a partner in your life that's going to be a mature male and not a five-year-old that still is in short pants mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. You don't need the short pants syndrome. That's not necessary. So this is what you've got to get to in the way of understanding. There's not a lack of men around you. You know that. That's not it. So the real question that you need to understand when you're asking me this is, do you want what would be called just a boy toy type of situation, or do you want an in-depth relationship? And if you want something that's going to be ongoing, where there is an honest-to-goodness partnership and commitment, there's a difference with that. And that's what you have to be true to yourself about, because you can have what you sincerely want, but you're going to need to really be clear about what you want. Because it's the quality of the character and the person that's going to make the commitment and the relationship work long term. And that's not coming for about 2 to 4 years. So I would say invest in you first. Make sure you're at that positioning. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good, because you've got it.
Very well put.
You can have it. You can have it.
Very well put.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for your call, MQ.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye, dear. Mm-hmm. This is Donna Sebo, and if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the telephone number to call into. Hey, guys, do you want an inside track on the ladies in your life? Well, there are studies, and you hear me say this often on the show, there are studies upon studies upon studies. Well, someone decided they wanted to investigate jewelry. What is it that makes jewelry such a significant statement about a woman? Men enjoy jewelry, but it's a different scenario. And every woman has her own taste. She has her own likes, her dislikes. But if you want to get an insight, guys, into a statement about a woman, does your lady love pearls? Well, if she does, she's a charmer. She also is elegant. She is sophisticated. She loves being a woman. And think of the pearl. The pearl is something that comes into its beauty over a period of time. And the seed that creates the very environment for the making of the pearl goes through a lot of agitation to end up with that beautiful, refined, polished, and beauty. It's soft, yet it's magnificent, and pearls will often change their color hue when a woman wears them because of what is the essence of her physiologically. The pearls will become very, very radiant. It's something that's very fine. So, gentlemen, the ladies with their pearls, you've got someone that's classy. Now, what if you have a lady that loves the symbols like angels, or there's spiritual things that are symbolic that they like to wear? Well, this is a person usually that has a deep faith. And this is a woman that you would need to know that your actions make a difference with. You will find that this woman is intelligent, she's curious, and she's always asking questions about life. This is a woman who feels that she really can be the goddess in life. And she has a deep reverence for the life force around her. So, gentlemen, be insightful. Now, what if it's a trendy necklace? It's making a statement. It's daring. It's bold. What if her jewelry is very, very dynamic? You've got a woman there that's confident, guys. Yes, pay attention. And it means that this woman is outgoing, assertive. It's saying, I have confidence in myself. I enjoy who I am. And by golly, you're going to find a lady that's not going to be afraid to try new things. Now, what if you find that your lady treasures heirlooms? Aha! Well, gentlemen, just know this is a woman that loves family, treasures memories, really, really values tradition. Special person, very loyal, a person that will be that very dedicated, committed partner in your life. Well, that's a little bit of trivia. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, the time has just gone by like the wind. I'm so delighted you've been able to join me. Tomorrow, we're talking about Advice is for Winners, Raul Valdez Perez. Check out why. Won't you join me tomorrow morning? This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. I'll be chatting with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.